We're not satisfied with just a win. We want to be great.
We're going to fight, and we're going to ride with this thing until the wheels fall off.
The first step is to believe. The Heat playing some terrific inspired basketball here to open up game three. That's three fouls on Davis. Jimmy Butler bringing the Heat. Just a marvelous performance. This is the largest lead they've had so far in these finals. James drives, finishes, and is fouled. Off the glass, and the Lakers retake the lead. Butler says, give me the ball. The drive, the runner, he banks it in. Oh, what a masterpiece from Jimmy Butler.
That's everyone else booked.
You got to be on the court. This is not a good look.
A 40-point triple-double.
How else do you say it other than Jimmy F. and Butler?
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome to The Jump, indeed. I am Rachel Nichols. Today, joined by a couple of just, you know, NBA champs, just those rings, those little things. With me here in the bubble, 2016 champ, Richard Jefferson. And joining us remotely, 2008 champion, Kendrick Perkins. Welcome, friends. Coming up, we're going to talk about Anthony Davis. He scored 15 points in Game 3, so what changed for him last night? We will discuss that shortly. First, though, Jimmy Butler simply amazing yesterday. He joined Jerry West and LeBron as the only players to have a 40-point triple-double in an NBA Finals game. And here's the most important part. He's the only one of those three to put those numbers up and win the game he did it in. Here are the numbers, in fact. 40 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds on 70% shooting, and didn't take a single three. But after the game, Jimmy again downplayed his own performance and emphasized, well, you know what he cares about, winning. Take a listen.
What is it about you where you just don't care? And it seems like you almost would prefer if it was Tyler's night or if it was Kelly's night or whoever else scoring 40 and a win.
Everybody remembers winning. That's it. I don't care how many points you score. All I care if you win or loss. And for us, we're all about winning. We are. I say it all the time, and I mean it. The guys that we have, the group that Coach Pat and Coach Bo put together, it's always to win, nothing else. So I hope the next game I score zero and y'all talk all y'all want to talk and we win, so I come up here and say the same thing.
Let's put in a little context about how important Jimmy's performance was. The Heat win last night, the second largest upset in the finals in the last 30 seasons based on point spreads. The only larger upset was, oh, say it with me, Richard, Allen Iverson's signature 48-point game.
Step over him.
Game one, 2001 finals. The only loss the Lakers team suffered in those playoffs. Now, of course, I don't like to talk about this part as much, but it was the only game that Iverson's Sixers managed to win in those 2001 finals. Does Butler's performance last night, Richard, have you believing the Heat can do a little bit better than that and make this even more of a series than AI did back then?
Well, truth be told, it's not about whether or not I believe. It's about whether or not his performance helps his teammates believe. And I do believe that his performance did that. Even up until when he was talking trash and him and Bron had a little bit of back and forth at the end of the game. I will say this, Bron started it and then Jimmy had the last word. And ultimately, it was more about, hey, look, if our leader is not fearful of the best player in the world, then we don't have to be either. And I think he's just instilling confidence in these players, and these players are giving him even more of a confidence. You've seen the way Tyler Hero played. So I think this is more about him giving his group even more confidence that they believe that they can do it.
Well, RJ, I'm with you on the part where you say that he's instilling confidence into his team, and rightfully so after that performance that he put up yesterday. But do I believe that he can win this series? Absolutely not. I mean, if you look at it, Jimmy had to play perfect. He had a perfect game last night, in my opinion, the way that he dominated on both ends of the floor, and I just don't see that happening. And by the way, the Lakers helped them out with 19 turnovers. I believe LeBron James has six and Anthony Davis has six. Well, LeBron didn't have one single turnover in game two. The Lakers came out flat. They came out like they was in a scrimmage, and the Heat came out desperate. The Lakers did not match their intensity, and I just don't see the Heat playing this extremely well to beat the Lakers in any more games in this series. And I'm calling it now, Rachel and Richard, RJ. Gentlemen sweep. That's what the Lakers do. That's what they've been doing in these playoffs. Gentlemen sweep is what's going to happen.
There There you go. Well, I don't know. I would say this about belief, though, to Richard's point, that Jimmy Butler even acknowledged to me that he was nervous in game one. And I was like, you nervous? And he said, yeah, I've never been on this stage before. And he said that they now do believe that they belong there. So is that going to translate into more wins? We'll have to see. But they have had a change that way mentally. The second thing is, Perk, we got to talk about where you're sitting.
And
right?
That chair. Like that chair. Perk, you are one of the biggest human beings, and somehow you are sitting in a chair that is bigger than you. Where? Look at that. It looks soft, too. It looks... Look at that smile.
It is. Some people say it looks like I'm laying
something.
In the casket.
It's something,
right?
Perk.
Richard's just jealous, Perk. He's just jealous. He wants
it. It looks sharp, himself. Though, Perk. It looks soft. Look comfortable.
Looks good. All right, I want to talk to y'all about Anthony Davis. 15 points in Game 3, not what we've been used to seeing in these playoffs. He was in foul trouble for most of the game. But he only attempted one shot in the fourth quarter when he was on the court. That is very unlike him. Now, he did say he was unconcerned after the game. Take a listen.
You know, just silly turnovers. I mean, I had four offensive fouls, miscommunication on some passes. But, we just have to be better overall. I mean, we'll be fine. We make shots. We didn't defend at all tonight. They made big shots, made some good plays. Trust me, we'll be fine.
So Perk, AD says the Lakers will be fine. What do you think changed for him in Game 3 that made him less effective than he was earlier in the series?
Well, you got to give credit to the Heat defense and those Miami Heat players because they came out with a different type of edge. But also, I got to give a lot of credit to Eric Spoelstra. His game plan on Anthony Davis was phenomenal. The way that they were trapping him when he caught the ball on the low block on the touch, they were getting the ball out of his hands. And in that mid-range post area on the low block, I think that's not going to work for Anthony Davis going forward. So now it's on Frank Vogel to readjust and make some adjustments to put AD in position to be successful, maybe catching it in the mid-post range around the free throw area. But a lot of credit to Eric Spoelstra because I think his game plan yesterday was phenomenal as far as getting the ball out of Anthony Davis' hands and mixing it up and showing him
now,
different
look,
bodies.
My thing about this is that as great as the Lakers played in game one, there was a lot of things there. Game one, there was a ton of injuries, and they shot the ball extremely well, probably as well as they have shot in this postseason. It was very, very impressive, especially at that initial Miami Heat start. But after that, you notice the Miami Heat have played better. They've played with more confidence. And Anthony Davis, just in my opinion, he needs to catch it lower because if he catches it in that mid-block area, then all of a sudden it's like they can send a double team. You saw the offensive foul. They are loading up on him, forcing the Lakers to shoot threes. Now, this is a difference. When you're going to live, if the Lakers go out there and shoot 43% one night, do you know what you're going to do the next night? Make them prove that they can do it again.
Yep.
And I think that's what they're doing. They're just going to keep loading and keep loading, forcing the Lakers players to shoot and knock down shots. And I think that's where he got a little bit out of sorts, is that he thought that he would have a little bit more space to work, and he didn't.
I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend I could predict what the Lakers' three-point shooting is going to be for the rest of the series because they have been inconsistent. I mean, sometimes they've been great, right? Mm-hmm. So in the regular season, they were in the bottom third of the league in three-point shooting. In these playoffs, though, in every round, they were consistently shooting toward the top of the group competing in the playoffs. So I don't know which Lakers team I'm going to get in that respect.
Neither
by
do
the
they.
Way, well, and by the way, the other ingredient in terms of Anthony Davis's performance and what adjustments he or Frank Vogel might want to make is we don't know if Bam Adebayo is going to be coming back in the next game. Bam addressed the media today. We'll talk about it a little bit later on the show. He said he is feeling better. He doesn't know yet if he'll play game four, but at some point he wants to come back in this series, which will change things all over again. All right, coming up, I sat down with the commissioner yesterday prior to game three. We talked about a lot, including the league's plans for next season. Stick around. Adam Silver coming up next on The Jump.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything.
All right, guys, before game three last night, I sat down with Commissioner Adam Silver. We discussed how watching other leagues play outside a bubble may affect his thinking about what he wants to do next season. Remember, the NBA has said their preference is to play in home markets. That means teams' home arena in front of fans. But as we've seen in some other leagues, baseball, football this week, that can get a little bit complicated. Take a listen to our conversation. Welcome back to NBA Countdown. We are here at the arena where Game 3 is about to be played. I am Rachel Nichols, joined now by Commissioner Adam Silver. And congratulations, Adam. What you have pulled off here really is just truly staggering.
Thank you. It's a bit premature. We got some games yet to be played, but thank you.
How has watching the sports that have elected not to do a bubble, like the NFL, which has had to reschedule two games just this weekend, influenced your thinking on next season and that desire to play in home markets?
I'd say the answer to that question is also a bit premature to make decisions for us yet next season. We've, of course, been following it closely, and I think both baseball and football would acknowledge that if you're not in a bubble, it increases the chance that this is a highly contagious virus, that someone's going to get it. I think the real issue, when people are living at home, and it's the same for you and me, it's going to increase the chance, especially if you have kids. I think the issue is with daily testing and rapid testing, can you quickly contain it?
Right.
And so it doesn't spread. And I think the NFL is clearly learning more as they go. Mm-hmm. And they've been terrific, baseball and football, sharing information with us. And we, hockey, and the other leagues have all shared information with each other.
You've said that the start of next season is flexible as you wait for more information, medical advances, advances in testing. Of course, at some point, it would become too long for the NBA to take a break. So how long are you comfortable with the NBA offseason being?
Right. It's too long for us to take a break. And then you got to start thinking about the other end of when do you get back on schedule and when do you start? How far long can you go? I've said previously that the earliest we'd start is Christmas. Maybe more likely will be in January.
Do you have a latest, though?
Not really, only because you're right that on the players' bodies, we only want to go so long. They clearly need a rest physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, from being in this bubble. But then the question is, what's going to happen with the virus? As Dr. Fauci says, the virus will decide. And if there truly is a second wave, things that could push us back. And we also were very mindful that while it's fantastic what's happening in this bubble, we love our fans and we want to bring them back into the arenas, and we want to do it, of course, safely. And so if there are advancements right on the horizon, that will be a reason to wait.
The NBA has certainly been the most visible billion-dollar organization championing social justice and civil rights. As you noted in your press conference the other day, though, that has not been universally popular. How committed are you to being that going forward?
We're completely committed to standing for social justice and racial equality. And that's been the case going back decades. It's part of the DNA of this league. How it gets manifested is something we're going to have to sit down with the players and discuss for next season. I would say in terms of the messages you see on our court, on the jerseys, this was an extraordinary moment in time when we began the discussions with the players and what we all lived through this summer. My sense is there'll be somewhat of a return to normalcy, that those messages will largely be left to be delivered off the floor. And I understand those people who are saying, I'm on your side, but I want to watch a basketball game.
Thank you to Commissioner Silver for taking the time. Kendrick, what's your reaction to the commissioner's response and how the NBA will handle social issues moving forward?
Well, first of all, Rachel, how can you not love Adam Silver, right? He's the best commissioner in the sports, right? We have the best commissioner, and I love him. Just listening to his interview, you could tell he has a genuine good soul. But, like, I just love everything about him. But to answer your question, I think they're going to continue to get better. I think the ownerships are doing what they need to do behind the scenes. I know I talked with the Boston Celtics owners and Steve Pagliuca and Wick Grosbeck, and they're doing things right now for us, you know, getting together with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to figure out different ways to interact, especially in the African community, and reach out to people that they have relationships with, for as mayors, governors, to help get us back where we need to be. So it's on the franchise guys, in my opinion, to make sure they keep their feet on to the pedal and keep sure that they make sure they hold their owners accountable to make sure that they don't take steps backwards, yeah, but keep moving forward.
I like what Adam Silver said. You know, he's talking about his name as far as names on the jerseys and you know, Black Lives Matter on the court. This was such a unique moment in time, and I think they the NBA has always been at the forefront, and so they wanted to focus in on that with this group. Now, moving forward, I understand, like, you're still a business, and this is still a company, and so you have to look at how can we now take our efforts from on the court to off the court. What can we do in conjunction with the players off the court, working in communities, donating money, helping some of the issues that are very, very important in all of the athletes' communities? I think that's where their focus should then go on to. And I personally believe that Adam Silver, all of the owners, and even a ton of them opening up, you know, the arenas and practice facilities for helping for voting. I think that should continue. That shouldn't just be for the president. That should be when you're doing stuff for the Senate and for the House. Right. Like, because those are the individuals that are making and moving these laws along that are going to be affecting all of these communities. And it's not just the presidency. So I think that this is step one, and I look forward to see what the next steps are.
And look, at the beginning, I felt like it did really matter to put names on the back of the jerseys and to have a signage on the court, especially with Black Lives Matter, because you really had so many people in this country who wouldn't even say that sentence. And so the idea that the NBA stood up and said, Black Lives Matter. We are putting the weight of this billion-dollar business behind this. We believe in this. We believe in our players. That was important. It's not just a slogan. It is actually representing something. But there is a point after you have made that, after you have said to everyone, Black Lives Matter, after you have put the weight of your business behind it, that you then have to do things that are more consequential and meaningful, more tangible. So I am very much, and Perk, you and I have always been on the same page on this, I am very interested to see what the NBA's ownership groups do, because they are the ones with the political influence and the money. You are talking about some of the richest people in this country. And they have the power to affect change in the way that even individual millionaire players don't have. So that is what I'm looking forward to see coming forward. All right, guys, coming up, Jimmy Butler, LeBron James. Well, trash talking back and forth last night. Is that something, nothing, or everything? We'll discuss next. When that pressure on. Will you be stepped like a mirror, or will you turn on the just like when that pressure on.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Jimmy, first I just wanted to clarify, it looked like you said you're in trouble. Is that what you said?
It is what I said. We're not going to act like I'm just out there talking trash, because I'm not. Bron said it to me at the end of the first. That's what happened. I just said it to him in the fourth quarter.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm here with Richard Jefferson, Kendrick Perkins. You just heard Jimmy Butler addressing some of the trash talk from Game 3, and that gave us a perfect excuse to play one of our favorite games here on The Jump. Something, nothing, or everything. All right, so Jimmy Butler could have let his stats do the talking last night, but he did not. LeBron and Jimmy both chirping back and forth throughout the game. Jimmy, of course, did get the last word, although both men, I want to point this out, both of them after the game talked about how much they love playing against each other and how much they respect each other. So, Kendrick, is the trash talk something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything. Rachel, we don't want a friendly finals. We want to see this type of interaction. They're competing. This is what we want. And we don't look. This is bigger than just Jimmy Butler and LeBron James. This is bigger than the Los Angeles Lakers versus the Miami Heat. This is LeBron James versus Pat Riley. We all know that relationship ain't in on good terms. And I want to see this. This is what we want to see. We don't want to see a friendly finals. Keep talking.
I don't understand how the Pat Riley, LeBron James thing didn't end on good term. It's like when Bron decides to do what he wants to do, everyone's upset, right? Dan Gilbert was upset when he went to Miami.
Okay, well, let's not put Pat Riley in the same category as what Dan Gilbert did.
What I'm saying is that when Bron decided to go back home, all of a sudden he put he Pat Riley in a bad spot? It's like, no, he decided to end his contract, fulfill it, and go home.
There's a
lot more to that going on, but this is my point. I'm saying it's something. It's not everything. It's not nothing. And why I say it's something is the same point that I made earlier. When you are a Jimmy, or when you are a Tyler Hero, when you are a Duncan Robinson, and you see your best player looking at LeBron James on the Mount Rushmore, talking about you're in trouble, y'all in trouble, in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden, I'm telling you, you go as your leader goes. And so a lot of times, you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, Jimmy, yeah, they in trouble. You start hyping yourselves up. You start hyping each other up. So it's something as far as I think the energy that he gives to his team, he just has them all believing, and that's what you need.
I mean, it's just what we want to see, right? Mm-hmm. It's guys going at it, even if they are friends off the court. As y'all always tell me, just because we're good, you know, when comes time to have that glass of wine, we are not good inside of these four lines, and we saw that last night. Mm-hmm. LeBron also got some attention when he walked off the court as the final 10 seconds ran off the clock last night. I mean, the Lakers were down 11. The game was over. This was not the Pistons walking out on Michael Jordan, but Richard, is it something, nothing, or everything?
Look, I understand it's the finals. We understand it's Bron. I'm going to say it's a little something, but I'm going to more lean towards nothing. I'm going to say nothing, and this is the reason. He walks off the court, like everyone knows. It's victory formation. He's walking off the court. He stops. He turns around. He looks and sees it goes to zero. Every look, he's sitting right there. You see other players. You see Rondo. You see Kuzma. It goes to zero. After it goes to zero, then he turns and walks. He didn't know that there was a 0.7 differential with the referees. You need five guys on the court. We're talking about LeBron James, and he stood there. Rondo and Kyle Kuzma had already bailed out, but the only person we're talking about is Bron. It is nothing. That's not my phone. That's not my phone this time.
I believe you,
it's not
Richard.
My phone.
Richard,
how is my phone
I'm with
still
you on
going
that.
Off?
It's nothing about LeBron as far as him walking off the court, because when you look at the situation, everyone was leaving, like you said, even the coaches. The game clock and shot clock was basically the same time. But to me, it's everything. It's everything in another aspect. And let me tell you why, because to me, it looks like Jimmy sent them to the showers early. That's what it looks like. And now it's everything, because now we all are interested to see what happens in game four, because the Lakers walked off the court pissed off and Jimmy Butler sent them to the showers.
You know who this bothers? This
night.
Bothers people who don't like bat flips. That's who it bothers. It bothers the unwritten rules people.
Jordan would never do that.
Well, that's what I say. So we got in The Last Dance, right? We got when it really actually was something.
That is not cool.
And this was, hey, we're not shaking hands after.
With 7 seconds ago, yes. That's not right? cool. That
so
right there.
That is when that actually means something. Not in game three.
Look at MJ's face. MJ was disgusted. MJ was disgusted. And I love it. Isaiah, like, look, I don't know why I didn't make the dream team. I fit all the criteria. I can point to why they didn't have you on there. And yes, you did fit all the criteria, because he was a bad man.
And that's when I took it personal. Okay. Over the weekend, let's move on. Over the weekend, Adam Silver said it's, quote, unlikely the NBA will stop next season for the Olympics. Now, we don't even know if they're going to get to the Olympics, but the NBA season potentially starting in January, it just becomes, do you shorten the season so you avoid a conflict in July or August with the Summer Games? Then again, we don't know when the Summer Games are going to be because they're rescheduled. We have a date, but we don't know if they're actually going to happen. I'm asking Kendrick. Wait your turn. Kendrick. Is the Olympic Games without NBA players something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything, but it's a statement by Adam Silver saying one word, adjustments, meaning he have to make the necessary adjustments to make sure that the NBA get back on track. So with that being said, we may not see our best players from America playing in the Olympics this year, and rightfully so, because we got to make sure that we get back on track and make sure that the games get back to playing the regular scheduled times and not playing until October like we're doing right now. So I believe it's everything. I think Adam Silver is calling the shot on this one, and it's the right shot to call.
Okay, but it's not just the American players in Team USA. There's 108 international players who played in their Olympic teams or plan to play in their Olympic teams. And also, you've got the TV schedule, whether the players are playing in it or not. Richard, do you think ESPN, ABC, TNT are going to want to go up against the Olympics and NBC? It's in something.
Yeah, yeah. So it is... it's a little confusing. First of all, let's look at it from this standpoint. USA Basketball, as important as it is, it has done the job that it's supposed to do. USA Basketball was put out there, and the Dream Team was put out there to grow the global game. It's done that. That's why we have so many international players. But the season is also important. We know this, Rachel. Yeah. The owners do not care about the Olympics. They do not care about it one bit. And so this is going to be a weird moment. You do not want to be competing against the Summer Games if they are able to pull it off. But there's a give and take here. You got to figure it out. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't have NBA players in the Olympics, or if you wanted to have certain players, like if Giannis wanted to leave his team for a month and go play again for Greece. You know, he's entitled to that.
The complication, though, is it's not just leaving. Whatever they work out for quarantining and whatever they work out for keeping protocols of keeping people safe, if someone's flying off to the Olympics, working them back into the NBA would be a whole multi-week affair. So yeah. I can see a possibility where the NBA plays right up until the Olympic Games, which would not be enough time to let players compete in them, but then would not have the NBA as a whole competing with the Olympics. We'll see. Who knows? Who knows what next season is going to be like? Who knows what next month is going to be like coming up? I know what next block of the show is going to be like. Mark Spears is going to join us. He's going to discuss his new book, Spencer Haywood, and what the NBA needs to do to address the lack of diversity among head coaches. We're going to talk about that as well. Now playing on ESPN, our Monday Night Football matchup has Aaron Rodgers and the Packers hosting the Falcons at Lambeau Field. Plus, tomorrow, the Aces and Storm play Game 3 of the WNBA Finals at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Then on ABC, it's Game 4 of the NBA Finals between the Lakers and Heat, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. It's all now playing on ESPN and the app. And here is what The Jump recommends for today, the Spencer Haywood Rule. Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Iconoclast, written by our colleague Mark Spears from The Undefeated and Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. Spencer, as we know, grew up in rural Mississippi. He was born to indentured servitude, picking cotton. In 1970, he earned the ABA Rookie of the Year and MVP honors in the same season. He later challenged the NBA's draft rules in the Supreme Court. This book is phenomenal, and we are now thrilled to have co-author Mark Spears here with us.
I like that ring.
I got my copy. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You got your copy, Richard?
I got my copy. I told him I wasn't going to do it unless it was signed in, and he did it. He signed. Thank you.
All right. So when did you and Gary Washburn decide you guys just had to write this book?
Talking to Spencer, he reached out to me, and I've done a couple stories with him with The Undefeated, and as you mentioned, there's a lot of stuff goes with him, and he was comfortable talking about picking cotton and the racism that he dealt with in Mississippi and free agency and the drugs. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Being married to Amon, this dude deserves a 30 for 30. And then also, you know.
Know he was married to Amon.
Yeah. There's some stuff with him.
Wow.
Okay, Spence.
Yeah. But, you know, Gary and I've been covering NBA over 20 years. He's been covering over 15. This is the first real book offer we got. And to get it for a guy like Spencer, man, we had to jump at it.
No, that's awesome. And meeting him just very briefly, you know so much about people's stories and kind of what he did to help open up, you know, players getting free agency and all the different things. But when you talk to him, he feels like his place in history up in that kind of important place of other individuals isn't where it should be. Like, is that something that's conveyed in this book?
The name. The Spencer Haywood Rule. He wants, like, some things about free agency to be named after him. He's really, really adamant about it. Mm-hmm. Been fighting for it for years. And when they read the book, they'll learn about his history in free agency. So the Spencer Haywood Rule is something that he wants implemented in terms of giving him respect for what he's done.
What he fought for. He went to the Supreme Court to fight for this.
He deserves that respect.
Yes.
100%. And I got to say, I love the way the book looks, by the way. It's not just the front, but the back cover as well. He says, I was fighting for everyone before me and everyone after me also. And I think that is so meaningful and so true. And that learning about guys like this for people who are, you know, it's funny. Tyler Herro, you're going to hear a little quote from him later in the show because I sat down and interviewed him this morning. Yeah. And I was joking with him about, hey, do people scream songs at you because of Herro, right? Yeah. He's like, half of them, I've never even heard of these songs because he's so young.
Yeah.
And you just get reminded that a lot of the people in the NBA Finals, in the game today, they're young. Maybe some of the players don't even know
Hey,
Spencer Hayes.
And he's a character.
Oh, yes.
He used to eat roadkill.
I can't.
You know.
Okay.
That's that old Southern boy. That old Southern boy. Okay.
And there we go. I do want to talk to you a little bit about today's NBA. You have been really tracking this issue of where are we with black coaches in the NBA. And this is just not new right now, but right now is what we have to talk about. Doc Rivers, when he was officially introduced in Philadelphia, became the fifth right now black coach going on with our current structure, but we still have five teams, right, that have openings. Clippers parted ways with him. There was concern, right? What are we going to do here? Here is on Doc on why he ended up in Philly.
I love coaching. I absolutely love it. But I was not going to just coach anybody. I can tell you that. I was ready to take a break. And it just depended on the team that was available. And if I thought that team, in my opinion, was ready to win, that excited me. And, you know, when Elton called, it was an easy get on a plane and take a look for me. And just when you look at these players, these young players, and their potential, the fact that they've had, you know, so much success in some ways at the ages that they are already, and where I believe they can go, for me is a job you just couldn't turn down. And that's why I'm here. Just really excited about it.
So listening to him, he is now with the numbers back up to five. There's five openings. What is the league doing to make sure that the coaching and on the bench is representative of the players who are on the court?
Well, Mark Tatum, who's second in charge in the NBA, Ora Stewart, who's in charge of diversity and inclusion, anytime there's an opening, they send candidates that you would think of, maybe some that you wouldn't think of, black candidates, candidates of color, women. Now, they can't force the teams to hire anybody, but they're making sure that you know that these people are available and what they can offer to the team. What you decide to do after that is on you. So these teams that say, we couldn't find anybody black.
Right.
That's all a lie. You know, they're getting big in time information, and I'm starting to hear more about John Lucas possibly in Houston, more about T. Lou getting interest from a couple different places, and Adam Silver, he kind of gave a hint the other day before Doc was picked that, hey, I do think that African-Americans are in a league that's 75% black are going to get some of these openings.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I think obviously T. Lou is going to have, if not at least one job offer, he's going to have two opportunities to go, you know, and whether it's, you know, Indiana or New Orleans, or, like, you know, he has a relationship with Griff, even, you know, being somewhat, people believe he's a front runner for the Clippers. I think my question is, you see those names of the top few. I just think there just needs to be a longer list, right? There's individuals like Jamal Mosley in Dallas that has been, you know, paying so much time in working with
David Vanderpool.
I was going to say, we're starting to see David Vanderpool get some looks, and it's someone he probably should have gotten looks 3 or 4 years ago. Right?
And I think that falls on us and the people in the media making sure that these names are put out there so that they get the opportunities for interviews and stuff like that.
I'm going to give you another thing.
Please.
The players.
Yeah, the players also.
I think here in the bubble, they've realized what kind of power they have. So when it comes to these hires, whether it's a free agent, I mean a front office or the coaches, you know, say something.
Yeah.
You can't say, you know, you better hire somebody black, but at least let it be a diverse process. Let me know about the process. And they have powerful players in this league who can make an impact on who's looked at.
Well, and we saw it with the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, you know, Kyrie and Kevin Durant signed off on that Steve Nash hire. You're not going to hire a first-time head coach, even if he is a Hall of Famer, unless the players, and obviously there was a relationship with him and Kevin Durant, so that helped it. But that just shows you that players do have a little bit of a say-so in who they are bringing in and who they're interviewing.
Absolutely. And look, you also want to see black head coaches get the same patience, right, that some of their white counterparts do. When Nate McMillan was fired, all I heard from players was like, oh, yeah, fire the black guy when he gets you to the playoffs after, you know,
everybody's
everything
been
that
injured.
They've been going.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the one thing that I think was most disappointing with what Chicago did in terms of its front office job is I had an assistant GM say, we feel like they'll take the worst white dude over the best black guy. That was painful to hear somebody say that, but they had some merit to that. And then Chicago flips it around, and although their coach that they did hire was white, they did do a bigger search that included black candidates in a real way.
And what you want to do is get rid of that feeling through actually getting it done over the years, so that when somebody white is hired, they don't have to feel like you don't want that reaction.
Yeah, like Billy Donovan is a great coach,
right?
And he's
Arturis Karnišovas is a very quality executive, but you don't want to have that stigma going on, and that's only you can only do that by changing the history. You can only do it by being better toward black executives, toward black coaches, and we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So all right. Everybody go buy Mark's book.
Please.
Because, you know, goes on sale tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us. Your coverage here in the bubble. You can pre-order it, right?
Yeah.
Amazon right now.
There you go. Boom. Coming up, Bam Adebayo spoke to the media for the first time since his injury in Game 1. Stick around to find out what he said about his status in Game 4.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything. And in part by Tostitos. Get to the good stuff.
Tomorrow, Breonna Stewart, Sue Bird, and the Seattle Storm look to complete the sweep over the Las Vegas Aces in the WNBA Finals. We will find out what happens next. Tune in at 7 Eastern on ESPN. All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Last night, the Storm took that commanding lead. They want to win their second title in 3 years. Do you think they'll complete the sweep, Richard?
100%. I'm sorry, this team is loaded. I've been a fan for a very, very long time.
So fun.
And I think it's 100% going to be a sweep. It's over. It's done with. I can't wait to hear all the people just attack me online. That's my favorite.
Hey, respect to the Aces, by the way. They got the league MVP.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they're just going to roll over.
No, I'm not there saying they're going to roll over. But look, Sue Bird, the way they're playing, it is just, it's been impressive. But I think it's over with. Come on, Perk.
I'm with them, Rachel. I think it's done. They smell blood in the water, and it's over with. They might as well pack. The bags are packed. The Jets are on the runways, and they're ready to go.
Good stuff going down in the wubble. All right. Bam Adebayo spoke to reporters today. This is the first time since leaving Game 1 with a neck injury. He said, quote, "I'm getting better. It's up to the medical staff, though. I'm trying to get back as quickly as possible, but they're trying to make sure I am safe and ready to play." Richard, how cautious would you be if you were Bam?
Well, look, it's difficult, right? Because he's supposed to sign a contract extension this summer. He has the ability to sign it. And we all know this. Like, you want to fight for a championship, but you also have the opportunity to make generational money. And he's not going out there against Daniel Tice and Enes Kanter. He's going out there against Dwight Howard, Bron James, and Anthony Davis. So the opportunity to re-injure that is really, really high.
Well, RJ and Rachel, his money is already signed, sealed, and delivered. That's not the problem. The problem is that you don't get to the finals often. And I had a knee injury, and I was in the finals in 2010. And just getting to the finals is an accomplishment. And you just never know when you're going to get
Perk
back
not,
in your
Perk
career.
Is not signed
Forget winning
until
the championship.
It's signed, Perk. Just, is not signed until it's signed. You know that.
Well, we will see.
But RJ, well, this deal is done.
I will tell you that Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley are the ones who keep telling him he can't play. So they are looking out for him and that money as well. All right, we're running out of time for today, but I do want to get this in. I sat down earlier this morning with Heat rookie Tyler Hero. He's discussing his snarl from last night. Take a look. I know you have seen photos, video of yourself, of what happened at the end of Game 3.
Yeah.
Can you do it for me right here now? Can you do the
See,
snarl?
I don't think I can.
Come on.
I was like, it was just in the moment. I don't think I've ever done that in my life before. I just did it.
You're 20 years old, and you do still have a little bit of a baby face, so you know what the internet did with that snarl, right?
Yeah. I seen a whole bunch of stuff last night with the face I made. Like I said, though, I've never made that face before in my life. It just happened in the moment of things. I guess that's what the NBA Finals will do to you.
I guess that's what the NBA Finals will do to you guys. That was great, right?
You gotta love it, man. We're gonna.
He is. Look, I'm telling you, I'm for sure in my life. I believe that this kid Tyler Hero is saying, "What's good, homie? What's up, my boy?" Like, this is his conversation. He has too much swag with him. He reminds me of Mike Miller to the max.
Look, all I know is that his Twitter handle has "Rich and Famous" RAF in it, and he did that when he was in sixth grade. So the
love
man has
guy.
Had confidence all the way through. We'll be back tomorrow. Hello.